Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the independent soccer show bringing you opinionated English Premier League analysis. Here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
You are listening to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, coming to you from the Mile High Two Daft Yank Studios, and joining me as always from the shadows of Stone Mountain Studio, my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Yeah, back after a little impromptu break there on my part. You know, I went to New Orleans for a week, kind of a unemployment vacation slash pound on the pavement looking for work thing, but we're back, you know, ready to talk some soccer.
That's right.
Football, even.
Yeah, we tried to do a show during the week with Corey at the Crescent City Studios, but the Wi-Fi there wasn't so great.
Yeah, something to do with the, I don't know, the new laptop didn't like the configuration, so we had some, you know, so we had to cancel, and then I had to, you know, end up having fun in New Orleans instead. So
we took a week off, but it's okay. We're back now, and we got some big soccer issues to break down because there's been a lot of news over the past, 10 days or so. So let's get the crowd fired up and let's talk some footy.
Oh, the creaking's back.
Yeah. First of all, we're not going to talk about any games because they're long gone, but we can both say that Corey and I are both happy after the events, I guess, of the past 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, man. We big win over Chelsea and a cheating Man U style win. So yeah. Things are turning in our direction.
There we go. So Arsenal got that, and then Spurs
absolutely.
And then Spurs killed Tiki Taka for the 2,000th time.
That yeah, Tiki Taka is dead again. It's like a cat.
Pressing kills Tiki Taka. So Spurs manhandled City, and are only a point back out of first. So we're both happy. So cheers to that. Big round of applause for everybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how to act sometimes when both of us are, you know, aren't – when we're both out of the North London crisis. Now it's North London jubilation.
Yeah. It is great.
For the moment.
For the moment. That's right. Things can turn quickly, ratherly quickly on a dime. But let's get into some big issues here, Corey. Three big issues that have popped up here in the past couple weeks. This is an international break. Now, we could break down some of these UEFA World Cup qualifiers, but I think we'll pass.
Yeah, because I haven't watched one this week yet. So
neither have I. So let's get into the big news, and that is, of course, I think this broke on Monday of this week, I do believe, and that would be Bunker Bob, Mr. Bob Bradley's going to Wales. Bunker Bob going to Wales, boys and girls, which is historic.
Yeah, considering there's never been a American manager at a top level club in Europe, much less obviously since he's been at Le Havre, but certainly not in what would be considered one of the best leagues in the world.
That's right. No American manager has ever managed in the big top four, which of course is England, Italy, Spain, and Germany. And so Bob Bradley is the new manager of Swansea City. And so he's the first American to tackle the Premier League. Just your initial thoughts on this move.
Just that it's interesting that it's the same club that Landon Donovan has recently invested in. And wasn't there some American group that was also interested over the summer at some point in trying to buy Swansea outright? Or am I making that up? Or was that Bournemouth?
You are right, and they did buy the club.
Okay, so yeah, then I find that interesting that it's a lot of these coincidences, wink, wink, coming together for Americans.
Yes, Swansea City is an American-owned club now, and without a doubt, if there were not American owners, this would not be happening. And that got a lot of people talking about, is Bob Bradley qualified to get this job, or did he just get it because he's an American?
Well, that seems to be irrelevant at this point.
And why do you say that?
because he has the job, and it's not like soccer in the past hasn't hired people because of who they're related to or who they worked for, or, you know, I mean, half the people that toil around in the championship in League One bang around for 5 years just because they were youth products at some club, or, you know, like a big club where, you know, if they would have been the youth product from Forest Green Rovers, you know, nobody would have gave them a chance. So it's not like, you know, it's not like England doesn't have an old boys network either. So, you know, again, it's one of those, that's why you want certain people in certain positions sometimes, because that's how, you know, sometimes that's how you get your breaks. You know, it's not like clubs in Italy used to be famous for, you know, if you wanted one Dutch guy, you bought three of them. That way he wasn't lonely when you bought him. So, you know, the idea of if you get more than one, maybe he'll settle in quicker and they'll play better together. You know, so it's not like it's a new thing just because the Americans have come along.
No, good point. And that's it. I said a lot of things about this move, and we'll get into it here. But I also did one of my last tweets on this, on the @2DAFTYanks account on Monday, was, hey, no matter what I've said and no matter what everybody else said, relationships matter. And this is not the first time or the last time someone's going to get a job based on a relationship. And now it's Bob Bradley's job, since he's in the job, is to make the most of his opportunity.
Well, yeah, as I once saw somebody put it, it's not how what's not important is how you got the job. It's if you can do the job once you get it. So, you know, I mean, that's part of the reason why you, in your own personal life, you try not to be a giant asshole, because, you know, having friends is generally what helps you get back on your feet or what helps you get your foot in the door somewhere. You know, it's whether or not, you know, those relationships become conflicts of interest, you know, once you get a job that, and you're not performing up to the level of the job, then that's when it should become an issue. But how you get the job, to me, like I said, that's the whole reason why you network in the first place, you know?
All right. So now let's move on. Now, this is a discussion I haven't heard anybody have. I haven't been listening to a lot of stuff, so I'm sure maybe someone out there is. But let's talk about, is this actually a good fit for the club, Swansea? And is this a good fit for the manager, Bob Bradley?
Well, again, I mean, we're talking about a club that, you know, we've said it numerous times, was 10 years ago, they were 15 minutes away from being an amateur club. So, yes, there's a lot of money to be made in the Premier League nowadays. But there again, if it's not a good fit, you know, he'll either stick around for a year in the championship after a relegation, or they'll get rid of him. I mean, you know, in this day and age, if people don't have some sort of out clause, you know, to pay people off if they're not up to scruff, then that's, you know, part of the management's fault. And again, that's one of the things that, you know, a club with promotion and relegation, you know, possible to the club, that's something that the management should take into consideration. And if they don't, then that's, you know, negligence on their part.
Okay. I'll add some thoughts here. Now, in the short term, I think this is a good hire by Swansea, because they need someone to come in. They're in a relegation battle, which you predicted at the beginning of the season. So good for you. It seems like they're going to be in this for a while. And one thing Bob Bradley can do at times is he can organize a defense, even though when he was manager of the U.S., we had a big-time problem of conceding goals early. So short-term, this is a good fit, because Swansea needs to adapt more of this defensive counterattacking style to stay up. But if he's able to keep them up, I don't know how long he'll last, because he's not going to play the style of football that Swansea's been accustomed to all these years, playing attractive attacking football as they rose, as you said, from 15 minutes away from being an amateur side, clear to the Premier League.
Well, there again, I mean, they even before Bradley got hired on Monday, the last weekend, I think it was Kyle Martino talking about somebody, I don't even recall who it was now, but I think he quoted the average tenure of a Premier League manager is under 3 years. So I don't know. I know we're supposed to talk about it because we're on a podcast, but I think it's one of those issues that a little too much is made about long term, because nobody really thinks in long term anymore. And the one club that does gets bashed for it. You know, Arsenal, with having Wenger around for 20 years. So, you know, even if he's successful, it's like I said, a lot of times managers are gone within 4 years, even if they're successful anyway. So if they're not, you know, they just move on to somebody else. And I mean, obviously this is a special case because it's going to kind of set the template for the next American manager, or, you know, or not an American manager. So obviously it's special in that instance, to where if he does well, it might open the doors for more American managers overseas. But like I said, I don't, long term, I mean, anything beyond 2 years for a manager now, you know, is pretty much a bonus anyway.
No, I agree with that. And then you raise an interesting point about getting these American managers overseas. And I don't think if we ask this question enough is, are these American managers who may be in MLS or NASL or whatever, are they willing to go to what do what Bob Bradley did, right? Now, he went to a small club in Norway to get his start. Not many Americans would be willing to do that. So he's got to be given credit for, you know, going to Europe and building his career up.
Well, and it's kind of the same. He kind of took the same route that we're always talking about, that, you know, more American players should do, that, you know, starting in a smaller country, but that at a top level, because, yeah, you might be at a smaller club, but you might sneak your way into the Champions League and, you know, play continental football and get international experience without actually being on the international teams, you know, as it were. Because, you know, like I say, in this day and age, everybody knows about everybody just about. So if you do well, even if it's in a smaller league, you know, you basically can't stay unheard of longer than a year anymore. So, you know, if you go to Denmark and you play well enough, somebody in Germany is going to hear about you. You know, if you go to Belgium and do well for a couple of years, somebody in the Netherlands or England is going to hear about you. So, like I said, I don't understand why a lot of people not only don't try it, but even, you know, actively look down on those kind of routes, because, like I said, Bradley just did it, in the manager form. So there again, that's one of those that if you go to another country, smaller country, and you don't pan out, you know, it's like what we're always talking about in England, that a manager doesn't do well there, but if he's from Belgium or whatever, he just goes back to Belgium and finds a club there. So it's another thing, you know, maybe more American managers can start thinking about as well. Like Bradley, maybe I'll go get a club in Norway or Denmark, or, you know, even, you know, some little tiny place like Luxembourg or something. And again, if it doesn't pan out, I'll just go back to the United States.
Exactly. So that's to just put a bow on this conversation. Instead of all these people whining and crying about why did it take so long for an American manager to get to this point, we'll turn the question around. What have American managers done to earn that opportunity? MLS is not the place to do that. That's just my honest opinion. You may disagree, but there you go.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's like anything. It's not that Europeans, you know, have an overt, you know, I'm trying to think of another word, but I can't. But it's not that, you know, it's not that they're, say, suppressing American managers outright, but a lot of times it's like anything. A lot of times, you know, if you're a German club, it's just easier to hire a German or a Dutch manager because they know the landscape easier. So a lot of times it's not so much a talent issue. It's just sometimes, you know, well, it's going to take him, you know, 6 months just to integrate into the country. So it's going to be difficult. So we might as well just go with people we know. So I don't know. To me, it's one of those issues that, you know, just because you start small doesn't mean you end small, you know?
Yep, gotcha. All right, let's move on. We'll gone that out. We'll gone Bunker Bob out. You're gone, Bunker Bob.
Yeah.
Well, from with the show, not from Swansea.
Yeah, with that said, I hope I hope Arsenal destroys Swansea 8-0 this or next weekend.
Oh, that's true, yes. We should mention that Bob Bradley's first match is against the Arsenal.
Yay, man. Bradley's lucky, comes up against tactically clueless Wenger in his first match. So
Exactly. So we get the newest manager in the Premier League for now. I mean, that could change, right? Before the next round of matches versus the highest or the oldest tenured manager. So there's some juxtaposition for you there. All right, you're gone. Gone it out. All right, let's, I'm going to reluctantly get into matters of FIFA here, but this is just so ridiculous that we must talk about it, Corey. And that is new FIFA president. Is that what he is? Is he the president?
Sure.
Is that his name? Whatever. The FIFA leader. And that is Gianni Infantino, a.k.a. Sepp Blatter 2.0, who, by the way, is already I mean, it's been rumored for a long while now, but the rumors are coming up again that he's going to be facing the FIFA ethics board already.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was like a merit badge that all FIFA presidents have to get anyway, so.
Maybe so. But when he campaigned, we all knew this, and he campaigned openly when he was running for FIFA presidency, that he wanted to expand the World Cup to 40 clubs. Just by, you know, expanding the group stage by two more groups of four to get up to 40. But now he's come up with this crazy scenario that pretty much I can't find too many serious people in favor of, is going to a 48-nation World Cup that they could vote on as soon as this coming January. And under his 48-nation plan, Corey, it would work this way. There would be 16 seeded teams. And it doesn't say how these teams would be seeded, if you'd use the FIFA ranking, or if you'd use who bribes FIFA the most, or if you use who has the hottest women. I don't know. But 16 seeded nations would go straight into the group stage, and then they would bring 32 nations to wherever's hosting the World Cup. And he said it could be a multi-continental thing, to where you would have 32 nations with 16 one-game playoffs, basically, to get into the group stage, so that you would have 48 nations who could possibly make it to the World Cup. Your ideas on this 16 plus 32 format proposal by Sepp Blatter 2.0.
Well, they lose me immediately when they start talking about the multi-continental stuff, because at that point I don't understand how it's any different than actual qualifying. So, you know, unless the tournament is held in the same country or, you know, one of those dual smaller country things like Austria, Switzerland, Netherlands, Belgium, then, like I said, I don't understand how it's technically not the same as qualifying when, you know, you have the Oceania Asia playoff to get in, you know, for a spot. Like, so I don't understand how that's any different, other than they can charge $50 more for the ticket by labeling it an actual World Cup match, you know?
Yeah, and the devil's in the details, right? Like, yeah. How do these 16-seeded teams, how many does Europe get, right? Does Europe get 8 teams automatically in? Do they get half the field of the seeded teams? So there's so many things. Now, I think his – to answer your question of your criticism, I think his idea, and he did mention that ideally – all 48 teams would go to the World Cup host nation, and you would play the playoff round in that World Cup. So it'd be technically part of the World Cup. It'd be a playoff to get into the group stage. And this is where hopefully some people at home with us saying playoffs are channeling their inner Jim Mora.
Yes.
Playoffs! Be great. World Cup playoffs! Who's with me?
Well, obviously the perceived smaller nations, because, you know, I mean, obviously the traditionally quote unquote lesser continents of Africa and Asia have been clamoring for more spots. So, I mean, eventually we all knew, you know, if you're paying attention, at some point the World Cup was going to have to expand again just to, you know, just for political reasons of getting more African and Asian nations in. So, I mean, obviously they're going to be behind it. Because especially since removing Blatter kind of cut off, you know, their golden calf, so to speak. Since, you know, as one article put it, what's the, you know, what's the fine line between you know, bribery and development of smaller nations, you know, where money, you know, more money is starting to flood into. So, I mean, like I said, at some point we all knew that the World Cup was going to not only expand, but almost have to expand just for political reasons.
Yeah, and I think this is a way for Infantino to kind of consolidate his power, right? Because mm-hmm. he will never get voted out if he's allowing all these different nations possible access to the World Cup. Now, you and I are big proponents of competition. We want these smaller nations to develop and to become, you know, more competitive in a footballing sense, but I don't think this is the right way to go about it. I think it's kind of a gimmick.
What you mean? The playoff part, you mean? The
playoff part, yes.
Yeah, because there again, it's almost kind of, to me, if you don't give them the standard three group games, it's almost like, you know, it's almost like kid table stuff again, where, oh, we want you around so we can market, you know, market that we're for the little guy and, you know, give you a token match, knowing that you're probably going to lose, and, you know, the same old big boys that will be around that we can make money off of. So, like I said, but back home in Mauritius or wherever, you know, Guadeloupe or wherever the country is going to qualify from, you know, you can then turn around and go, oh, but we helped get your smaller nation to the World Cup, so vote for me next time, like you said.
Yeah, but to be fair, let's say for our North American friends and our friends north of the border, they should be clamoring for this. It's the only way Canada will ever get in. Come on, Canada!
Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe Canada's new league, if they ever break away from MLS, maybe they'll pass up MLS at some point.
It's possible, and I've heard rumblings of that. And we'll get into that here in our next topic, some of these issues. So we'll see what happens with this World Cup expansion. It's going to happen. It's going to be at least 40. You're going to get an expansion of the group stage. And I think maybe this is Infantino's way of, because people, a lot of people don't like disrupting or adding an extra group or extra two groups, because it kind of takes away from the tradition. But really, what is tradition, right? What, we've only had this format for how many years? Not very long. The 32-team format.
Yeah, and once your team starts winning with the new tradition, the old one generally gets quickly forgotten anyway. But yeah, I mean, it's again, like I said, people complain about the expansion of the Euros this summer, but it's like any organism. It's never ever going to get smaller. So, you know, they're never going to cut back, because that's going to be loss of advertising and sponsorship money. So it's always going to expand. So, like I said, in the end, it's almost, you know, the criticisms are almost a moot point, because it's, you know, any valid criticisms aren't ever really going to get listened to anyway, because it's just going to get expanded because of revenue under the guise of, you know, populism. Jeez, I'm sorry.
Yep, I got you.
Last vestiges of the Colts trying to fight here.
Yeah, so there we go. So hopefully that was a good conversation. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about this. And it's an interesting thing, but it's coming, and it's going to happen in some form or another, which is fine. It's just, I just want to make sure that it just doesn't really water things down, because I like your analogy of the kids' table. I think that's the perfect analogy.
Well, yeah, because you could also the other point I wanted to make is the even more cynical side of me also thinks that it's part of the expansion has to do with taking some of the political heat off of the Russia and the Qatar World Cups.
Yes, and I was going to get to that too. Is, man, I mean, I'm starting to care less and less about international football. I mean, I would say that my interest has been cut in half, I would say, within the last 2 or 3 years, just because of all this nonsense. And with the World Cups coming here in Russia, and then the supposed December World Cup in 2022 in Qatar, I think by that point in time, I won't even watch. That's how drastically my interest is dipping in this, and it's all about club football for me.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't think they're going to take away the World Cups from either Russia or Qatar. So, like I said, the cynical part of me definitely thinks that the expansion has to do with taking some of the political heat off of that and putting it on to – or not taking the heat off per se, but, you know, when you have two topics to talk about, obviously you can – you know, you can't pay attention to the just one topic. So it's a way of kind of distracting some of the journalists from – you know, the current issues with the Russian and the Qatar World Cups and the bribery and all that stuff.
Very good. All right. We'll use the gong again. I don't know why. I just want to hear it because we were off last week, right? So we're a gong short.
Yeah. And hey, the second band at the concert that I went to, they ended their set with a gong. So I was all happy.
Did they?
Yeah.
What was this? Was this in New Orleans?
Yeah, that's why I went to New Orleans in the first place, was to go see a Devin Townsend show. And the band that before Devin Townsend was Between the Buried and Me. I'm sure all, you know, the metal listeners we have heard of Between the Buried and Me. So, yeah, when Between the Buried and Me finished their set, they gonged themselves out.
Awesome. Well, I did not know that you went to see Devin Townsend yet again. So, great. All right.
Yes. It was fantastic. Sweet. Again. So.
All right. Let's gone it out. And we won't do another gone this show, but the MLS and U.S. soccer stranglehold on the soccer marketplace in this country may be goned out as well. They were under fire, Corey, in the past 2 weeks here. A lot of rumors and a lot of stuff going down. But today, your big breaking news. Let me bring this up this article so I do not get this wrong. But we have two senators, Corey, two United States senators, one being Dianne Feinstein of California and Patty Murray of the state of Washington, have wrote a letter to MLS Commissioner Don Garber asking him to provide the details of the relationship between some and the U.S. men's and women's national team and the MLS. Interesting.
Yes, so does this have to do with the women's national team pay thing or the
Yes, I would say so, 100%.
Okay, because I know at one time there was also a question about the nonprofit status of USSF as well.
Yes, so largely we have two female senators, and I think their idea with this is to try to get the idea of how much is the women's national team being treated fairly by U.S. soccer and some. But if they're being forced to open their books for that, then you're going to also get an idea of how MLS is involved in this, right? So this is very interesting. Now, this is just an inquiry, but in this article here from Jonathan Tannenwald out of Philadelphia, he talked to one of these lawyers, the guy from UCLA who's on Twitter a lot, who knows a lot about soccer and law, and he says that now, of course, when the government asks for an inquiry, MLS and Garber could just say, go away, we don't want to answer this. But if they do that, they're opening themselves up to, you know, an actual federal investigation and a possible subpoena where they do have to open up their books.
Yeah, and a congressional hearing.
Exactly. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. But do remember – now, because they're all in the same bed, you could argue that they're separate entities. But remember, Sunil Gulati was called into Congress to answer questions about the U.S.'s involvement in the FIFA scandal, and he declined to talk. So I don't know if this has a little more legal status than that, but it'll be interesting to see how the MLS and some responds to this request.
Well, yeah, because at that point, like you said, if they open up their books, I think even as soon as it becomes in part of the inquiry, I think it goes to public record, if I remember my civics class correctly. So the more bulldogish people on Twitter, shall we say, like the Ted Westervelts of the world, you know, I'm sure we'll be zeroing in on some of the information, you know, if it'll be part of the the public record, which, like I said, I would have to check on that, but I think it would be a matter of public record, even inquiry.
If it got subpoenaed, or definitely too, if it got subpoenaed, it would definitely a Freedom of Information Act type of deal.
Right.
FOIA, as the people on the Hill call it.
Right. I just mean it wouldn't necessarily be there wouldn't necessarily be any protection, you know, because sometimes they, you know, withhold evidence from the public while a case is going on, you know, not to, what's the word I'm looking for, you know, like contaminate the jury and, you know, declare a mistrial. So since it's just an inquiry, you know, you wouldn't have to worry about that, I guess is my point.
Yeah. So very interesting that this, this news broke today, because a lot of people like us and other people have been asking, why are we hiding behind some? It's a shell corporation for U.S. soccer and MLS, and nobody knows anything about it.
Well, I think we're about to find out that, you know, that like some of us claim that a lot of the owners in MLS are using it as a tax haven.
I would guess so, too.
Or not a tax haven, but a tax write-off.
Yes. Well, I mean, or they could be dumping their losses into some.
Right.
Again, we don't know.
Yeah. Forward loss, whatever that's called.
Yeah. So there's a lot of theories out there by people a lot smarter than us, but, you know, sunshine is the best disinfectant. And I think we're about to get some sunshine into some.
Yeah. Cause I'm definitely curious. Cause once I read that article that would claim that a lot of it's just a tax write-off, it definitely would explain a lot of the odd behavior of MLS and their owners and why they choose certain markets and all that stuff too.
All right. And another thing that has been hot that I wanted to talk about, but we were off last week, is these rumors, right? So we have this Brian Strauss piece, well, I don't know now, maybe 3-4 weeks ago already, to where he's talking about the imminent collapse of the North American Soccer League. And then sure enough, after that, some legit journalists and some, you know, people on Twitter who say they have sources, but everybody was saying the same thing, saying that this piece was a plant to try to drive down NASL and the investment in NASL, because FIFA is coming after U.S. soccer over promotion and relegation. And to add to this proof, Corey, we have a letter that has been leaked out by somebody, and I've checked time and time again. It's on multiple places. It looks legit, and I haven't seen anybody say that it's a flat-out fake. I looked to see if anybody said it was a fake. And it's a letter from FIFA to the Australian Football Federation saying, hey, 2 years ago we warned you, you need to get a promotion and relegation plan, and you have since taken steps to get promotion and relegation in Australia. So for now, we're going to let you do your thing. As long as you get pro rel going, we're going to stay away. And so with that done, and that letter was dated from, I think, May of this year. With that done, it adds to the credence of people saying that FIFA's next target is the United States. So this is all coming together. I think that letter's legit, and I think the information by people saying, hey, I know people work at FIFA, and they're saying that they're coming after the U.S. over this statute in the bylaws, which we have quoted time and time again on this very podcast.
Yeah, and as much flack as he catches on Twitter, this is – when you told me about this a couple days ago – this makes crazy old tinfoil Ted correct, or likely correct, shall I say, that MLS and some probably curried some favor to get an exemption or, you know, an unofficial exemption for an unspecified period, kind of like the Australian letter claims, to be left alone under the guise of, you know, like I said, at some unspecified point, oh, we're going to have pro rel, but basically, you know, not necessarily work to do it. So, like I said, this Australian letter kind of makes crazy tinfoil Ted likely correct that MLS, you know, had the same deal in place.
Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. And I don't know, since everything is here is so segmented, I don't know what FIFA can really do. If you had to guess, I mean, in Australia, it's a little bit simpler because they don't have any other professional leagues. And so Australia is going to add a second division. They're going to add a professional second division. They're on their way to starting that up, and it's going to take time. You know, we're talking 5 to 10 years. And then eventually they have announced once that second league is stable and they have enough professional teams to fill their first and second divisions, Australia is going to have pro rel. Now, in the U.S., they might be able to – FIFA might say, hey, you've got all these different leagues. You need to figure out an official, you know, status, Division One, Division Two, Division Three, and none of this just, you know, name-only stuff to where there's going to be an actual pyramid. So I think FIFA could say, hey, you have less than 2 years to figure this out, or we're coming in with fines. And we're talking about things, boys and girls, to where FIFA won't recognize MLS clubs if they don't do this. They may even not recognize the U.S. men's national team. We could get barred from international competition because of this.
Well, and this is the issue that I've claimed all along, and I know I've talked to you multiple times about this, that – and again, it's the same thing crazy tenfold Ted's been claiming all along. It's not so much about the top level or, you know, the MLS claiming to be the top level – or major league or whatever. The main thing is the D1 designation. So if MLS wants to go do their own thing, let them go do their own thing. The D1 designation, which is what FIFA is supposed to recognize or basically bestow their recognition on as the legitimate top league, is what's important. So, and I had this discussion with a couple people a few weeks ago about there was a similar situation. There was a pirate league in Colombia in the 50s, I believe, that was, you know, there was a FIFA sanctioned league, and then there was this what became known as a pirate league, where some of the players went to play in because they got paid more inside Colombia than the FIFA sanctioned league. Well, FIFA sanctioned that league and basically barred all those players and clubs from being able to play in international tournaments and you know, being picked from international teams, or, you know, being unable to sign for FIFA sanctioned clubs. So that's the thing. It's like, yeah, MLS can always do what they want. People with money can always do what they want. If they can make a living having their own enclosed league, then by all means, go do it. But we want the D1 designation for pro rel because it's in the freaking FIFA bylaws. And that's what we've said many times, that MLS bots at some point are going to have to acknowledge, you know, at some point it's in the FIFA bylaws. So either they're going to have to admit, they being MLS, either they're going to have to admit they have a pro rel exemption and then specify the reason why, or institute pro rel because it's in the freaking FIFA bylaw.
Yeah. So if these rumors are true, and it looks like Australia had about a 2 year gap. So I would guess within the next 2 or 3 years. And again, as I said, even shorter, because we have the infrastructure, we have more clubs than Australia has. It may make that timetable longer because MLS is, because things are a little more segmented here, or it could speed up that progress. So, but I think within the next 2 or 3 years, we're going to have an answer on what the hell is actually going on. So it's quite fascinating.
Well, yeah, because there was that letter, you know, from the late 80s that U.S. soccer had a 3-tiered pro rel plan in place, and all of a sudden that disappeared when Alan Rothenberg and his group, you know, bought the rights to market the World Cup. So, you know, that's been one of those conspiracy theories all along, that there's kind of been this unrecognized under the table deal where America has been allowed to operate on their own, you know, because of Rothenberg and his money or, you know, and that group, which then turned into some and their money kind of operating on the side. But at some point, somebody was going to have to be shown, like I said, either that there was some sort of exemption agreement in place, or somebody was a hypocrite. Either it's USSF, some/MLS, or FIFA themselves. And if FIFA was going to be shown it to be a hypocrite at some point, you can guarantee they're going to come down with sanctions at some point. So that probably means that, you know, that it's actually been, the some oligarchy all along and not FIFA, where, you know, FIFA's just been more, you know, looking the other way and not actually, you know, not actively, you know, part of, you know, an agreement, official or otherwise.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens here. But here's a theory I have that could, I think, helps people like us. Now, we all know it's absolutely 100% fact, for better or worse, that the only reason we got the 1994 World Cup is because we promised to start a professional league. Now, North America, United States here, maybe with a joint bid with Canada and Mexico, are prime favorites for the 2026 World Cup. And I'm going to say right now, if this isn't cleared up in the next 2 years through FIFA, FIFA will give us the 2026 World Cup, but only under the condition that Pro Rel comes. So that will be a big delineation mark. If U.S. Soccer and MLS reject the World Cup because they don't want Pro Rel.
Yeah, because that's probably why, I mean, if you really want to get conspiratorial, when they were talking about maybe removing the World Cup from Russia or Qatar, and a lot of people were saying, oh, well, if they do that, they're going to have to give it to the United States because we're the only country that could that could host such an event on such short notice. And I'm thinking the whole time, it's like, well, they're probably not going to do that because of the Pro Rel thing. So despite, you know, the U.S. Justice Department leading the FIFA clean-out, you know, I don't think FIFA is looking to throw any bones to us anytime soon because of that. Plus, on the top, that they don't want to, like I said, they don't want to have a double political issue of giving a World Cup yet again to the United States without having a pro-rel plan, you know, which, like I said, which would have to be shown is in violation of their bylaws again.
Yeah, so I think that's an interesting theory that I haven't heard anybody say, but I've been thinking it for a while, that that could force the hand too. And could you think of the backlash, as I said again, if, because it would be reported, right? FIFA would come out and say, hey, we were going to give it to the U.S., but they didn't want to, they said no to Pro Rel. I don't know how you could spin that in a positive fashion if you're, you know, a supporter of MLS or of U.S. soccer. If that were to happen, if that scenario came up, which is very, very likely, given past history.
Well, yeah, because there again, there's still plenty of countries. Well, maybe not plenty of countries, but there would be a country like England that would be, you know, since they've already, you know, they're already trying to claim a favor for backing down on the 2018, or, you know, suing FIFA for the 2018 bid going to Russia. You know, so you can make an argument that FIFA owes England a favor as it is. So, you know, England would be more than willing to step up and, you know, to fill that void in 2026 if something like that were to happen. So, like I said, at some point, you know, nerds like us that like all the political behind the scenes stuff knew at some point that this Pro Rel thing was going to have to become an issue because, like I said, it's in the rule book. So at some point, somebody was going to be shown to be a hypocrite, and people in power don't like to be shown up. So, you know, inevitably, whenever there's a struggle like that, somebody's going to have to lose. And it's generally not the world governing body, you know?
Yeah. And it should be added that you bring up England. England is doing the opposite of us. Remember, they're adding another layer of pro rel to their system. They're adding another division.
Yeah, and like I said, they've already, you know, they're already have a feeling of disgruntlement with, you know, feeling like they got bribed out of the 2018 World Cup. So, like I said, I think FIFA, England kind of feels like FIFA owes them a favor anyway. So, you know, the awarding of the 2026 World Cup is definitely going to be very interesting because of all of that stuff.
Yeah, and I've seen reports I read today said that they were due to make a vote in 2017. But now they're saying that they may hold off until 2020 to award that World Cup. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, which only 6 years away, that would, I would think that would narrow the field of people being able to host the World Cup, or, you know, being able to bid to host the World Cup. So that kind of sounds like it would be shaping up to be somebody like U.S. versus England versus China kind of thing.
Exactly. And I was going to bring up China as the third one. China has gotten really involved in this, from what I've read today, in terms of advertising and marketing dollars with FIFA. So just, again, follow the money. So China is starting to step up their game. And, of course, you saw the number of players they're bringing in to their league. And they have ProRel.
And I was just about to say that spending on the players in China is not a coincidence when it comes to this. That's part of the reason why they're doing that.
Exactly. And and a lot of these guys are going to their second division making big bucks.
Yeah. But I'm saying that they're basically trying to build, you know, whether it's artificial or not, build a soccer pedigree to be able to market to FIFA to, you know, to basically award them the World Cup, kind of like what we did in 94. Just instead of players, we just did it under, you know, the because of facilities, more or less.
Exactly. So there we go. All right. Well, I thought that was a very good conversation. Probably won't get too many conversations like that.
Well, I was going to say, you're not going to hear crap like that from Grant Wall, you know.
No. Or the soccer eagle, which I guess he's calling himself now.
Who the hell's the soccer eagle?
You can guess who.
Fund my lifestyle?
Yes, fund my lifestyle guy. They referred to him as the soccer eagle. Ooh, he's the soccer eagle. Watch out.
Okay, so he feeds on the carcasses of dead animals?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I'm with you, Ben Franklin. You know, Ben Franklin didn't want the
– No, he didn't.
National bird to be an eagle because it was beneath America because it was a carrion bird. Carrion, yeah, C-A-R-R-I-O-N. Look it up, kids.
Yeah, he wanted it to be the turkey.
Yeah, that's right, the turkey.
So, yeah, which is – we can talk about that.
Turkey.
Right? We're only, what, 6-7 weeks from Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So close enough.
Yeah, it's now my favorite holiday pretty much.
So, all right, boys and girls. It is my tune, and I'm a little bit sad.
Because of the food.
Well, because of the food, but also, I mean, it's on a Thursday, right? And that's the Europa League is usually played that day. And so it was good for me because I could watch Spurs in the morning and then, you know, do Thanksgiving. But we're not in the Europa League this year, so.
Oh, ooh, life's going top, ain't it?
But I could watch Man U, though.
No.
Yeah, see?
There you go.
You like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to just watch Man U instead in the Europa League on Thanksgiving morning. Yeah.
The Zlatan Europa League.
Yes, Zlatan will be playing. Very good, yes. We'll make that a whole show.
The Rooney League.
Zlatsgiving.
Oh,
or something. We'll come up with something cool in like a blog and some Photoshops. Yeah. All right, boys and girls, we'll see. We try to go short because we're crunched for time. Corey's on the job hunt. I am in the process of
feeling well this week.
I'm in the process of upgrading the 2DAF Yank Mile High Studios. So we have like real life is getting in the way of podcasting. So I try to narrow it down to three topics. But again, we just talked so much about the issues and only the issues. So we hope you enjoyed us being back on the airwaves. I know a few of you reached out on Twitter to ask where the hell we were, but we're back. So thank you for listening. And I think we'll be back next week. What do you think, Corey?
Should be, because I might be moving back to New Orleans in a few weeks, but yeah, that's in a few weeks. So,
all right. All right, boys and girls, thank you for listening to the show, and we will catch you later.
Tinfoil Ted was right.
This has been the 2 Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at 2daftyanks.com or at 2 Daft Yanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the 2 Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.